So we're back to the second class from the geometry problems. How many people got all four problems right? Somehow none. How many people got three problems right? None. How many people got two problems right? None. How many people got one problem right? Okay, one man with one problem. Okay, so that's progress, okay? So you got the dog and gopher problem right, okay? How many people didn't get a chance to try it because there's only been 2 days elapsed since the last thing? A couple, and you just didn't get something working, or you just didn't try.
I worked on dog and gopher. I mean, it took 15 minutes, and I'm getting wrong answers. The algorithm seems incredibly.
Which judge are you using? You're using the
UDA, which I've always used.
Okay, so one question: why might you be having anybody else try the dog and gopher and have trouble? So you guys got it on the UVA judge, and it worked. Okay, so. And it worked reasonably quickly? Or?
Yeah, it actually worked. Yes, I had no problem.
God forbid. God forbid. Okay, so what might be an issue here? One thing that I'm a little concerned with, one possible source of spacing is the, if I had to guess, is the rounding up and down. Did they ask you for how many digits are significant?
He says near a single digit,
which is what they give it to you as. So there's no real rounding.
Well, except when you ground, when you get your... Oh, yeah, that's right, they give it to you outright.
Well, wait a second. Let's just think what they're actually giving. What are they... Are there any problems possibly with with round off?
Well, there are in the sense of... I mean, what you basically have to do is compute the distance. So you do that by finding the delta x, squaring that, adding that to the delta y squared, the square root.
But you say you don't have to actually print that. You don't print anything. You're only printing the, so there's not, okay, so the only real question is printing to make sure you're printing the right number of significant figures. And that you believe you are doing. What happens on a tie, out of curiosity? Who wins on a tie?
Gopher wins on the tie.
Gopher wins on a tie. Okay, I think that's pretty big of one. Okay, so, but you're, okay, what other possibilities might there be for trouble? Is it possibly that you're having any kind of problems parsing this kind of input format, or you've done that before, or?
I don't think so. It seems really straightforward. You know, the examples, the example input and the example output that I get match up perfectly. So, I mean, at least, of course it doesn't prove anything, but it's a good indicator that I'm
Yeah, I mean, you may want to make sure that the message here is correct, that you have the period after the, so those kind of things. Okay. Don't know. I would like to think this one should be relatively easy. And anybody, did you get any of them going, or you tried any of these problems? No. Okay. So dog and gopher we know can be solved and should be solved easily. Trying to figure out what we should talk about today. We talked a little bit about maybe we should try to work out the theory of some of these other problems. Okay, that would be my goal a little bit. We had talked a little bit about I have a little bit more geometry that I just wanted to sort of review, and then maybe we can maybe I'll review. I'll talk about my remaining geometry slides. Since I went through the trouble of putting them together. And then maybe we will try to work out some of the theory of some of these other problems. This one I do believe is the easy one, okay? But the others, these two I think are quite doable, and this one I think is quite challenging. Okay? So let's see what we can do. So what else do we want to know about geometry? We talked a little bit about points and lines. I just want to review a little bit about triangles, because I think triangles are an important thing. And so what do we know about triangles? Well, the most important thing to know about triangles is for right triangles is the Pythagorean theorem. Okay? Now what is the Pythagorean theorem? Everybody knows it. A squared plus B squared equals C squared. Okay? And so basically that gives you a way that if you have a right triangle, right meaning that you've got a
you know, a 90 degree or pi over 2 radian angle. Okay, that's one of the triangles. The longest edge we call the hypotenuse. Okay? And basically it tells you how to compute given two of the sides the size of the other one. Okay, any questions? That's well known. Out of curiosity, one thing that's interesting about it is if you haven't heard about the Fermat's, everyone knows about Fermat's last theorem. I think we discussed it. What is Fermat's last theorem? Anyone remember what Fermat's last theorem is? Okay. Oh, you prove something. Okay, terrific. Okay, what were you trying to prove? Anyone remember? Okay. As I remember, it sort of said that A to the N plus B to the N equals C to the N does not have a solution for when? For N greater than 2 and A, B, and C integers. So what do we know? Why do we know that that's, that, that the N greater than 2 is important?
Obviously, for
like
n equals
0. Well, for n equals 0, it's obviously, there's no solution for n equals 0. Terrific. Well, what about n equals 2? What is n equals 2? It's the Pythagorean theorem in some sense. Okay? And so the question is, are there triples? This is sort of something you may or may not have remembered from your geometry. Are there integer triples? Such as you have a triangle where this is an integer, this is an integer, this is an integer. 3, 4, 5. That's 9 plus 16 equals 25. Okay? So the fact is sort of Fermat's theorem does not hold for n equals 2. It does hold for n equals 0. Does it hold for n equals 1? N equals 1, certainly 1, 2, 3 will solve that problem. So basically, we now worked out all the cases, 0, 1, and 2, and we let the other people do it for larger values. Okay? Any questions? Okay, so the Pythagorean theorem is interesting for that reason. The other thing that's important, though, is that it enables us to you can analyze right triangles. So the thing that makes the Pythagorean theorem simple is that it's dealing with a right triangle. In general, you have triangles that are not right, okay, but arbitrary triangles, where you've got some angle alpha, beta, gamma, and sides A, B, C. And you would like to figure out, it's often when you're doing geometry, it's important to try to figure out the lengths of length or angles of some of these, given some other subset of angles. So what is the tool you have at your disposal to do that? Well, basically trigonometry. This is why trigonometry is interesting. And so what are the interesting things about trigonometry? Well, the main things are that you have these functions sine and cosine. Okay? Anyone remember what sine and cosine are? I find it interesting to review these things after many years because at one point you knew it. Okay? So what is sine x and sine y? Sine of x. Well, it has to do with triangles, but it's a sine function in general.
From you have a circle of radius 1.
So from a theory, somehow what it is, if I'm correct, you have an angle theta. If you have an angle theta in a circle of radius 1, the cosine, I believe, is the x coordinate.
Yeah.
And the sine is the y coordinate. Right? And that explains why it's sometimes 1, 0, 0, 1. Something in between. Okay? Now, what makes it interesting? Well, if you think about it like this, if I give you, you can then use the sine and cosine functions to, given two sides of a triangle and an angle, you can figure out what the other quantities in the triangle are. That's what's kind of interesting. And the thing that I remember, okay, is, I mean, basically there's the notion that again, there's this mnemonic which I remember, and I don't know if you guys have heard it. Have ever you heard this mnemonic, Soha Soha? Everybody knows that? Okay. How do you remember Soha Soha? Okay? This is supposed to be the name of an Indian chief, okay, although for the tribe trigonometry or something like that. And what it tells us is that the sine of theta, for every in every triangle, we can say that the longest edge in the triangle is called the hypotenuse. Right? That's what it was when we were dealing with the Pythagorean theorem. Then for any given angle, okay, there's three edges can be defined as either being the hypotenuse, the one opposite the triangle, the angle, what's the opposite one, or the one adjacent. Okay, what is the adjacent? I think of it as the one that's left over. Okay, the one opposite the angle is well defined. The longest one is well defined. The other one is the adjacent edge. Yeah?
It's like, you know, for any triangle, regardless of the right triangle or not, the longest edge is always considered the hypotenuse?
Considered the hypotenuse by me, okay?
Oh, okay.
So I think it's considered by, yeah, that's just the definition. I think that that's the right definition.
Okay?
Okay? So, so what is interesting here is we know that sine of alpha, of theta, is defined as the length of the opposite edge, in this case, the opposite edge, which would be C, over the hypotenuse. Okay, so if you have this and this, you can figure out that angle. Okay? Or if you have this angle and this, you can figure out this. So given any two of those three, you can figure out the other one. Everybody agree with that? Cosine is equal to the adjacent over the hypotenuse. So again, given theta and the hypotenuse, you can figure out the size of this, you can figure out the size of that by using those relations. And finally, the tangent, okay, of theta is defined as the opposite over the adjacent. So that's why it's useful to remember these. So, it tells you, remember what those three relations are. It's the only reason, you know, why I remember it. So what this lets you do is for any given angle, basically for most angles, and pairs of triangle of edges, you can work out, given two of them, you can figure out the third. Okay? And the only weird case is what happens if you have the angle here that's across from the hypotenuse. Suddenly this doesn't give you very much information. Okay? Because the opposite one is the same as the hypotenuse, right? So for this case, you need the more macho trigonometry, things like the law of sines, the law of cosines. Okay, if you care about that, that's in the textbook. Okay, any questions? Just to review the trigonometry. Okay,
so that's an important thing in geometry. So just refresh yourself with and know. I mean, I don't use my trigonometry very much, but it's good to know it's there. One other thing about geometry that's sort of useful, a useful thing about geometry to know, that that we will use a little bit next chapter, not this chapter, has to do with how do you find the area of a triangle. Okay, so suppose I give you a triangle. How do you find the area of the triangle? Okay, so the formula that everyone remembers is the half base times height. Well, what is the base and what is the height? Okay. My sense is the base is anything you want it to be. Okay, you have to lay the thing flat. So that side is the base. The height is the highest point above the base. How would we find that, given, let's say, the sides of the triangle?
Okay. That's the line that is perpendicular to base and passes through the 3D object.
Right. So, but how big is this? So where is that? How do you figure out where that, what that is? So suppose I give you the size of the triangle, this is 10, 5, 7.
I guess that's possible to get the angle also.
What?
Would you also get the angle of that triangle?
Well, not necessarily. If you were given, you know that this angle is 90 degrees. Okay, so what does that tell you? Okay. Okay, how would you find the base?
Right, how would we do it?
The
height. Well, you could do it by saying using a setting a couple of Pythagorean, you know, the Pythagorean theorem. You add, use it a couple times and set it equal to
equal. What possibility if you set this equal to x? This equal to 10 minus x. And now we know what y is in terms of x. We now know what y is in terms of x. We could probably solve for that that way. Okay? Did everybody sort of see that? But one thing I claim is this is not as trivial as it looks somehow. I mean, it's really, it takes a couple steps, but it's not something you immediately beat off. Okay? So there's another way to get an area of a triangle, though. It turns out to be extremely useful. Okay, that follows from linear algebra. Has anybody here taken linear algebra? Or most people have? Taking it now. Did they talk about finding areas of triangles and things by using determinants? Okay.
I think you will, though, if I remember correctly. I think we did discuss it. It's been a while, though.
So one thing that's interesting to know, okay, and I don't want to prove it now, but that if you had given the x and y coordinates of the points, okay, of all three points of the triangle, the area of the determinant of ax, ay, y, bx, by, y, cx, cy, y, okay? The determinant, if you remember about such things, you can figure out what the determinant is. That's something like this times the determinant of that, plus this times it simplifies to this six terms. Okay? And the interesting thing is that the determinant of this matrix is actually twice the area of the triangle. Okay? So given coordinates, the easiest way to determine to compute the area is by using the determinant formula. Okay? And I don't want to prove that, but I want to mention it. Then you divide by 2. So if you play the same game in higher dimensions, you want to find the area of a tetrahedron, you basically do the same determinant and then divide it by 3 factorial. Okay? And so on. So it's a useful thing to know, but what's more useful for us is that, and will be useful for us next chapter, is it turns out that this quantity here might be negative, okay? Sometimes this quantity will be negative, and sometimes that quantity will be positive, okay? So really, if you want to compute the area, you have to compute the absolute value of it. But what's going to be more interesting to us later on is what makes it positive or negative depends upon the order of the three points that you give it in the triangle. So the area of, I don't want to write it, but if you get the points as being A, B, C, we might get a positive value. But if we gave the points as being A, B, C, we would get the opposite side, a negative value. So what's kind of neat is going to be that this determinant test will also give us a way to tell us whether the points are in clockwise order or counterclockwise order. And that will be useful when we talk in computational geometry. Okay? Any questions? Don't really want to go into that, the theory of it, but that's something that's going to be useful. So if you want to compute the area, the side area is simply this determinant formula, the actual area is the absolute value of it.
Any questions? Okay? So the final bit of geometry I want to talk about before we actually can sort of start thinking about these problems has to do with just pointing out the geometry of circles. Okay, and what is a circle? Well,
how can you represent a circle? Suppose I want to describe a circle. How might I do it? Give me a representation for a circle. Possible representations for a circle. Okay? Now, when you were to represent the circle, yeah?
X-coordinate, the y-coordinate, and the radius.
So, what possibility to specify a center and a radius r? Okay? And why does that work? What is the equation of a circle? Does anyone remember what the equation of a circle is?
R squared
equals?
X minus x squared.
X minus x c squared. Cx squared.
Plus y minus y c squared.
And minus y c squared. So why is this formula equivalent to this? Well, this is measuring the distance from x to y, right? This is telling me how, you know, what's the delta. This is the set question. For any given point, x, y, this is computing the distance from the center, right? And this is saying basically, give me the set of points, the circle is defined by the set of points that are in the distance r from the center. Any questions? Is there any other way you might represent a circle?
Thinking about this.
So we represented a line by, one way we represented a line was by using two points, right? Is there some way we can represent a circle using a certain number of points? And I'm represented by a lot of anything seems like a bad idea, right? Because here's a very little, you have a little bit of stuff, okay?
I mean, you could represent it by two points that are just on opposite sides of the circle.
So if you told me that I had two points that were opposite, that would certainly represent the circle.
Or the center at any point.
So certainly two points that are opposite will tell me, if I know that that's true, I can compute what the center is. If I have a center and one other point, I get the radius for free from that. So that's true. Okay, any other way to do it? What if I give you points on the surface of a circle? If I give you two points on the surface of the circle, does that describe the circle unambiguously? What circles might go through those two points? What's the smallest one?
Smallest one would be where they're on opposite sides. Those two points are on the same.
Right. What are bigger ones? Squeeze it out, heat it, right?
Yeah, exactly.
So how many points do I need to uniquely specify the circle? Two won't suffice. Three. Okay, but think about it. The set of circles that go through these two points, or you can think of it as a small thing that has a diameter, and these bigger things push to one side, and the bigger things push to the other side. Is there any other circle that could possibly go through those two points? What? So I told you the radius, that would also describe it. Okay? So, actually, the radius would not describe it completely, by the way. Does everybody agree that if I gave you two points on the boundary of the circle and the radius, that would not uniquely describe the circle? Why is that?
Because you could reflect like that larger circle.
Yes.
The other side.
The thing, the basketball here or the basketball there, right? So what? But on the other hand, if I gave you three points, that will do the job. Is that clear? Because all the circles have to be these big things coming together and getting squished through it and expanding that way. Once I specify an extra point, okay, then I claim that that's actually enough. So 3 points on the surface of a circle are enough to uniquely describe it. Okay? Converting from those 3 points to find where the center is probably not completely trivial. Okay? But in principle it can be done. Okay? And you know, then you have to do some trigonometry probably or something like that. That takes some thinking. Okay? But that's another representation. Any questions?
So what else do we know about circles? Well, they're easy to put their area and circumference. One other thing we might want to do with circles is to compute the tangent line.
Suppose, let's say, I give you a circle. And I give you a point. The tangent line is the point that goes through here to there, that touches the boundary of the circle. How would we go about computing that? Suppose I know this point x and y. Suppose I know the center, you know, x, c, y, c, and I know the radius.
Well, if you know the equation for the circle.
Yeah.
And you also know
actually, isn't it basically, if I remember, didn't you give this wave function that tells you the distance from a point, you know, the closest distance between a point and a line?
Yes,
it's,
I did.
Basically, isn't that what, if you want to find a tangent point, it's basically what you're doing in this case. It's a point on the line that's handed to it that's closest to the center.
So what you're saying is if I gave you the line L, I showed you how to find this point. And you're 100% right. That's not what I'm actually asking.
Oh,
sorry. Okay, does everybody agree with that? I'm giving you the point. Okay? I want to find the tangent line. Once I have the tangent line, you're right, I can find the point of contact. Okay? How would I find the tangent line to a circle? Figure out exactly how to do it. So I think that that's the basic idea. Let's see if we can figure that out. We have here our circle. Let's draw this meter. We have here our other point. We have here our straight line. We know this distance. This distance is going to be, let's say this is D. Total distance here is D, and that you know, right? You compute the distance, because that's the distance between 2 points. You know that the distance from here to here is R, and you know that this is a right angle, okay? Now, what do we need in order to find the line, the tangent line, okay? 2 points, of which you already have one of them, would be one way to do it. or you have one, and you can figure out this angle, then you sort of have the slope, right? So really, I would say that either you want the coordinates of that, or you want that angle. Is that the right angle, though, or? Actually, it's up to you if that is the angle that you want. What is the point that was? I think that may be a little bit misleading. Certainly, if we had this point, that would do it, right? Okay? The reason why this angle is not clear, if this point was dragged down here, you don't want just that angle. You want to know that angle relative to the, you know, you want to know the angle of this in absolute space, not the angle between those two lines. Because this line is not necessarily vertical, you know, horizontal. Everybody agree with that? So what might we now be able to do? Because this is a right triangle, we certainly can compute, you know, this, this, and this, we can compute what this distance is, x. Okay, that's certainly true. Now, can we figure out what you know, we ought to go from here? Okay, we now want to get some other angles.
But you know the distance from the radius to the to the tangent point. Can you use a distance formula so that you're basically you use the tangent point as x and y? Do the same thing with x, but using the distance and then just use solve the common variables.
Say that again. I'm not sure I understand.
Okay. It's ugly, but you know the radius point.
Yeah.
You know, you want to find it. You know the distance r is going to be equal to rx minus wherever the tangent point is squared plus. What the radius is. Then do the same thing for this.
I see. Okay, I think I like that one. Yeah.
And then just solve for px and do it that way. It's ugly, but I think
let's think about how ugly it may or may not be. Okay? So what is this actually involving here? Okay? So, first of all, we should notice we can get rid of the square root signs pretty easily.
Yeah.
So part of the ugliness is gone. Now, what you've got here is when you implement this, you've got two basically quadratic equations, right? You've got a quadratic equation, two quadratic equations in two unknowns. How do you solve for that? Can we solve for that? It's not immediately obvious we have to solve for that. Okay, maybe it should be, but it's not. Well, what I could do is certainly I could expand this and expand that.
Yeah.
Okay? And so now I've got two quadratic formulas in terms of, you know, it's basically two variables, right? Now, how do I solve that? Quadratic equation was good for solving something in terms of one variable, right?
Yeah,
well, let's just think about that. Is that true or not?
Yes,
it, because if you, I mean, if you get two negative numbers, you'll be able to rule out, you should get, like, if you get answers, you'll get, like, one negative and one positive, usually. The only problem you're running into is you get two positive answers.
So what actually do we now want to do? Let's think about something else like this. Let's get back to that. There might be a way to make that work, okay? But at the moment, I'm a little bit, you know, not clear about that. Let's go back to this thing. How might we, let's say that we agree that somehow it's that the principle is the same as between this angle, along with a relative angle from this and this, right? We have to correct for that. Okay? If the angle between this and this was equal to zero, whether they were based on a flat line, then what we want is that angle. Okay? So let's just try to compute that angle. Let's see if there's a way we can compute that angle. Okay? Well, what do I know? It seems to me that if I've got a right triangle, can I figure out what this one is?
Yes.
How is that? Sotatoa? There's Sotatoa here? Okay. So what would I do? So it's the sine of R. But what I wanted to make it right, I got the opposite. I got all three sides. I should be able to figure out what that angle is. Right. So one way to do it would be to say, so if I want to use the so, it would be the opposite, which would be this one.
R over D.
Over the adjacent, so over the hypotenuse, it would be sine theta equals r over d. So the arc sine would give me that angle, right? I could do that with any of my relations. Okay? So how might I solve this problem? Well, now I know this angle. What I now, the only thing I really remained to do was to figure out what is the angle between this and the level. Okay, does everybody agree with that? Well, is that going to be so hard? Let's think about it. If I have it in principle, can I do it? I think in principle it should be clear that you can do it. Why? Because what's the problem reduced to? You've got a point here, you've got a point there, you want to figure out what that angle is. You know, I mean, how would we do that? Well, I mean, I'm just thinking you can certainly define this triangle. You know what the coordinates here are. You know the coordinates here. You know the coordinates there. Certainly you could figure out what the distance here is. Okay? It's maybe a little bit more. Yeah, so I want to think this is also determined. Okay?
The point. Oh, it's 90 degrees. Never mind. I'm sorry.
All right, this is 90 degrees. This distance is known as the delta. It's known the delta x's. Okay, you should be able to figure out what that angle is. Any questions? Okay. So in principle, I claim we know how to compute that tangent. Okay, and we know how to compute what the tangent line is, and from the tangent line as was observed, we know how to compute that point. Okay. Any questions? Okay. So it's a little bit tricky. There may be a slicker way to do it. I don't think I worked through how to do this in the book. But, you know, you'll have to tell me. Okay? It's been a long time since I did it. Any questions? Okay. So so that's roughly what we need to know about working with circles. Okay, let's think now about the lines, about the problems that we have. And let's see if we can work out some of the algorithmics or some of the geometry of it. What about the rope crisis and rope line problem?
So remember, here what our situation was, I give you two points, I give you a circle between it. I want to know what is the shortest rope that could be used to connect those two points outside the circle. How do we solve it?
Yeah. Well, you have two tangent lines.
Two tangent lines, right?
do it also, so you add the distance between the points and shows where the dimension circle, and then you have to figure out what the interior angle of that is. Use your circumference formula divided by.
Okay. So what are we saying now? Is basically, if I do these two tangent points, then I play this problem as relatively straightforward. Why? Well, it's the distance from here to here that you know, the distance here to here that you know, plus the distance along the arc of the circle. Now, how do you figure out what the distance along the arc of the circle is? Okay? Any idea? We heard the idea, yeah.
Figure out what that interior angle is.
Given these three points, you can figure out what that theta is, right? You know what the distances are, you can then figure out what that angle is. And what does everybody sort of agree with that? You can find a given angle, side, can you figure out what the angle is? And if you use the law of sines and cosines or something like that, that would be doable. Okay?
That's a good question. If you have, what's considered the hypothesis of a triangle if two sides are the same?
What?
What's considered the hypothesis of a triangle if two sides are the same?
Well, the hypotenuse, what? If the biggest angle and the biggest length is the same, how many times can the biggest length be the same? Okay? Well, three if it's an equilateral triangle. The three, then you know everything's 60 degrees and everything's good. In an isosceles triangle, somehow what you still have is the opposite, and I guess the hypotenuse is the other one, right? Actually, in general, if it's an isosceles triangle, it's not a right triangle. And so you need your general law of sines and cosines. And those, and somehow, remember, so I claim that that can be worked out.
It was a right isosceles triangle.
Sure.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I guess that's right. Okay. Okay. But if you know it's an isosceles triangle, you're dealing with a special case. Yeah?
It's the question of that circle with that element. The angle is the length of that arc, right?
Well, the angle, in fact, the radius was of 1. But what do we know about this circle? We agree that the angle here determines what fraction of the circle it is that length subtends, right? So it'd be theta over 360, or 2 pi, you know, whatever the way theta is represented. And what is the length of this? Well, it depends upon the circumference of the circle. It's that fraction of the length, which is 2 pi r. Right? What is pi?
3.1415926535893846243383876950288419. I can't compute the series or anything in my head any faster than that. Okay. No. That's memorized. Okay. But does everyone know actually how you get pi? I mean, how do you have to compute pi when you have, you know, if you do want to compute pi? Does everyone?
Well, that tells you what pi is useful for. So, I mean, you're right. You could get an arbitrarily fine measuring device in a perfect circle. You could measure circumference and radius and divide it. But how do you actually compute pi?
I don't know. There's a nice series
for it. There are a bunch of different series expansions for it. Okay? So, it's one thing. Remember back in calculus with Taylor series and things like that. That's where that area, that end of the world comes up.
But okay, so for rope rises and rope land, I claim that we now basically understand how to do that, right? There's a little bit of details you have to get straight, like how do you actually do the computation to get the tangent points? But once you get the tangent points, we in principle work that out. Okay, so this should be doable. Any questions? The birthday cake problem. We talked about that last class. Okay? Are we convinced that that one is doable? Okay? And I think that that one actually is doable. We talked again, what was the birthday cake problem?
Birthday cake problem said you were given a circle. You were given the locations of the cherries. Your goal was to try to find a cut through the center of the circle that divided the cake equally in half and partitioned the cherries equally. And we had the observation that it could always be done if the cherries were not collinear along the center of line, because we could simply rotate, you know, basically put our line right to the left of every single cherry. And we know that one of those has to cut half of them. Any questions about that? Or was that sort of worked out last time and everybody sort of knew that and believed that? Okay?
So that one I sort of believe. Let's just think about it one more time, though. Look carefully at this problem, because I just want to make sure. I want you to get this. I think this is probably the easier. This is first. This is probably second. There's one issue here that they talk about that's potentially tricky. But what is that?
Figuring out how to, doing your rotation of your angle through it is one thing. You can find an angle maybe without too much trouble. Oh, okay, great, this is my angle. How am I going to convert that into the form A, X equals B, Y plus 0, or A equals 0?
Now, one thing they're telling you
is that, that the line that they want you to give is going to be defined by, what's it exactly saying?
I see. So you're telling me that
it's a form AX plus BY equals 0. And what's worse is that A and B has to be integers. Right? How might we be able to do this? So now, we gave a way to compute the line, I think. I think everybody agrees that by somehow we can work with floating point numbers. That this is not that we know the theory here, right? We basically find each point, the angle, subtract a tiny little epsilon from it, just so we know we don't cut it, okay? And then see how many things it cuts. But here we're demanding that A and B both be integers. Or equivalently, what is that really demanding? Really demanding that y equals, what does it say? Something like minus a x over b. So the slope basically is going to be minus a x over minus a over b. Right? So how could we go about doing this? Okay, to guarantee that we get ourselves an integer here, or at least it can be a ratio of integers.
One thing that it seems to me is we don't really necessarily want to find angle, but maybe a range of angles. I mean, because we know that, there's going to be some, as we rotate, then we're going to reach a point where now it's acceptable, and there's some finite amount of distance beyond which it becomes unacceptable. So anywhere in that range is okay. So as long as we find an xy point that's inside, that range, we're good.
Okay, that I believe. Does everybody agree with that and believe that? That somehow that our method here, by noticing when, it does more than just the method that we had here, sort of describe for every cherry, it basically partitions the range of angles according to, we have here our center, we have here our cherries. any cut within, actually, is it, let's think what it means now. Is it true that any cut within here to here gives us the same partition of cherries? We have a cherry on the other side. So really what we have here, to be precise, is if we extended all the lines, not all the lines, here are cherries, all the way through. That's going to divide the space of angles into ranges. And for any line within that range, wherever we wiggle it around, it's going to cut the partition of the cherries the same way. Does everybody agree with that? So really what the discrete thing to compute would be for every one of these angles, of which there are two n such angles, if there are n cherries. Say this cuts 5, partition of 5, 1, 4, 2, 5, 1, 4, 2, 3, 3, ding, ding, ding. This is probably also 3, yeah, I mean, you know, so on. And once you find a range that's even, your question really reduces to, is there a slope within this range where these are both integers that lies between them? Okay? Does everybody agree with me that that's basically what our problem is?
Not even just a slope, but any point within that arc should be okay. Because the origin is at a point, so we know that.
Okay. So what you really want to say is the following. Okay, so somehow, I mean, the general problem that we're faced with is, given that we have an angle between A, alpha, and beta.
We draw beta.
That's your angle theta. Does there exist a theta in this range, theta equal to A over B, where A and B are within that integer range? Okay? Any ideas how we could find that? It's not obvious to me. Does everybody see what our problem is? We now have these two real ranges, and we now have limits to, it has to be a rational number between them.
I extend this line all the way line. I know that this is what I'm trying to find is some point in here. Right? So what I can do is I can extend this all the way down to the limit, which is I guess 500 or something, right? And so if I extend it at this point where
so now you've got this grid. Let's think what you really, what your world is.
Yeah, my world is a grid.
To the point, so we look at the
I say, okay, this and my, because I've got some angle that I have to call this. Okay. Now, what I should be able to do is I should be able to go, okay, well, because my angle is getting bigger, it's going to be easier for me to find a spot further away I am.
Okay.
So what I do is I go all the way down and I go, okay, well, here is where it crosses this axis, or, you know, this boundary. So I can't go any further down than this.
Right.
So I want to just go take the ceiling of this X body, and I'm going to just put it in here.
Right.
And I already have the line. So in theory, this point should be within this range if it's a solid problem.
That's actually interesting. Okay, see, what I did is I decided, I'm not trying to leave this yet, but this actually is truly is more interesting than what I was going to think of. Okay? So see what he's saying now? We look at this thing, certain angle ratios will not hit any grid points, right? So you're out of luck, okay? The angle is too small. So in our problem, that probably won't happen, because I think the points themselves are in this grid. Right? Did they think about how big the points are? I'm going to guess if the points are within,
take its radius 100. Don't know. Okay? The points are, the cherries are between n equals 1 and 50. No, n is the number of 50. No, the coordinates, we don't tell us where the coordinates are.
But if the coordinates is sufficiently weird, it might be that there is no solution that hits this grid points. Okay? So realize that the slope that we want is really defined by what is a grid point within that angle. Okay? Now the observation is that suppose we have a grid point. You want to claim that the place where we will see it is always on the lowest level. Okay? Is that obviously true? Not completely clear to me that it is. Suppose, let's say, could we imagine a situation where you had an angle that just hit like this, and another angle that hit just to the right of that. It is not obvious to me that the point that you're actually going to, the integer point you're going to get is going to necessarily be with that higher denominator. Okay? So, you know, to actually prove that, you need a proof, and I don't think that's right. Okay? I'd have to quite give you a disproof, but I think I've given you enough to make you nervous. Everybody agree with that? And let's actually give you now a little disproof, so you know. What if, let's say, this was a, you know, if you think about it, what the slopes are, here you're talking about, you know, let's say that this was some number, let's say this was 17 points down and 1 point across, okay, was the desired slope that you want, okay? The slope here is going to be, you know, exactly basically 1 over 17. Now, suppose, let's say, my real index was 20. 20 was the end of my board. I think if I make this close enough, if my upper and lower bounds close enough to 117, I don't necessarily hit every angle that's a fraction of the form C over 20. Sort of is convinced now. People see what I'm sort of meaning? That somehow 1 over 17, you know, these are relatively prime. This gets back to our number theory kind of thing. Okay? That 117 is, is relatively, 17 is relatively prime to 20. A tiny enough beam around 117 is not going to necessarily hit a point of the form C over 20. What is the closest point to 1 over 17? Well, probably either 1 over 20 or 2 over 20. Clearly. And by making the thing narrow enough, I can have something that's, this is basically, you know, one, you know, what is this? This is 1/5, 1/10, this is 1/17, that's 9.6, who knows what it is, okay? But this, I can make my angles narrow enough so it doesn't necessarily hit the bottom line. Okay? Everybody agree with that? So how might you find that integer?
Well, there's a inkier way you can do it, which is to start at the origin and move out in the x direction, you know, say plus one, and go, okay, now is my angle within the range? Is it greater than the range or is it less than the range? And then if it's in the range, then you're fine, you found it. If it's less than the range, you know, you move down towards the range by one. You keep doing it, you move down, 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 until all of a sudden it changes. Is it, if it's either in the range or less than the range, and then you change your direction.
So the way I might do it sort of is something like this. You know the denominator is going to be something between 0 and 500, or minus 500 and 500, right? You know one angle, you know the other angle. Given the denominator value, let's say 27, you know what is the small, you can compute what is the smallest integer such that it will be greater than this angle, right? Why? Because by compute certainly the floating point number for which they're equal, and then by, you know, truncating it up, presumably you get the actual integer. And the question then is, does this fraction satisfy the other angle range? So by doing something like, you know, 500 such tests, given an angle range, you can find a point there if it exists. Okay? Any questions there? What would be a dirtier way of doing these problems? Let's think about it.
Such that we don't even worry about angle ranges at all. So the interesting thing is that because one of the consequences of this is that there is actually a finite number of possible angles, right? And for any angle, it defines a line with the origin, and you can figure out how many things you cut and don't cut. Right? So how many tests do you have to do? Something like, it's like 1,000 by 1,000?
Although you could use some pruning to get rid of some of them.
Yeah.
Well, a million starts to be, is it big or not big?
Not too bad.
Not too bad. Okay. What I might try to do if I were doing this one, depending upon how, you know, how lucky I feel, okay? Because it's not obvious to me that that's a million steps. Basically, for a million times, what I would do is try the slope, okay, and see, does it, you know, does that line cut equally? Okay? And certainly a brute force like that, that would be something like a million times n. And it says there's only 50 cherries or something like that, or 100 cherries. I might try to do it that way if I were doing it. Okay? So note that you can enumerate all possible slopes because there are only 1,000 by 1,000 such slopes that are legal. He tells us one of them is a solution.
Okay. How do you determine if it, how do you determine if it dissects, bisects it so that most dissect equal cherries?
Well, you now test, you now have a line defined by the origin and the new point. And you ask yourself, now for every cherry, how many are above the line, how many are below the line? What you really now need to know is to solve the following problem. Given a line, given a point, do you lie above that line or below that line? So now you've got to do that anyway, you know, implicitly in what you're doing. Or equivalently, what angles are there? You could somehow reduce each one of these points to an angle. And you really want to know for every cherry, you reduce it to an angle.
and you'll know whether or not it's sort of above or below a given line. That's probably the easiest way to do it.
Yeah, you can reduce it to only half of the million. I mean, that's one quick way for him, because checking, say, the top half of the grid is the same as checking the bottom half.
Presumably, right.
Seems like there might be some cool way that you could reduce it even further by eliminating similar angles by seeing whether there are ratios.
So really what you want to enumerate are all pairs of relatively prime integers.
Yeah.
Okay? Integers, you don't know, if you hit the 0.11 doesn't work, the 0.22 is not going to work either.
Right.
Okay? And so you might get clever there. My gut feeling would be the only way this is going to work is if you get away, it doesn't matter how much you're going to save there. You save a factor of 2 in the way that you talked about. That's good. Okay? So I might, if I were doing this, if I felt brave, I might try to do it that way, as being the simplest way to do it. Okay? And that might very well do the job. Okay? Any questions? See what I mean? How people see sort of the idea that we're talking about? You see it, yeah? You see it, okay? The point being here that since they have told us that every single cherry, that all the lines have to be, the key notion here is they told us they only are interested in lines defined by integers, where the denominator is at most 50 and the other one is at 500 and the other one's at most 500 also. If we assume that the center cherry point is 0, 0, any line with a slope of that type, the slope is defined by a grid point that line passes through. And so your problem here is inherently finite because there are only as many different lines to consider as there are different grid points. So one way to do it is to try all possible lines, and for any possible line, does it, does it partition the cherries right? And you can figure that out based on the angles. Right?
What angles?
The angles of the cherries. So let's say I give you that cherries here. Look at it gets back to our angle ranges here. But somehow if I have a line like this, the key question you want to know is how many cherries are above it and how many cherries are below it. And they are above it if the angle lies between the slope, the angle between the slope and 180 minus the slope. So all these cherries are above the line because their angles lie between here and there. Okay? So I claim that this is one way that might be made to make it work. Okay? Any questions? And in fact, if you knew the angle ranges where you could be successful, rather than blind testing, which ones might cut 50% of the cherries, then you could sort of speed up your naive search by sort of just only looking at points, testing points that are within that line. Well, I can't because I gave you the trigonometry in my model. But let's just try this thing here. 1, 2, 3, 4, 1, 2, 3, 4. Let's make 5. These are my grid points. Here's my origin. Here is a cherry. Here is a cherry. What I really want is a line that passes through one grid point, so that there are as many points above it as there are below it. I can compute, given these two points, I can compute the angle here. That's basically the slope, right? By adding 180, I can compute the other angle, right? Okay. I can compute what the angle of this cherry is, right? The cherries above the line are those whose angles lie between this and this plus 180. And so your problem is really now testing how many carries are there with that property. Do you need to test every carry against every line now? Or might there be a way to count how many carries there are in a particular angle range without actually testing every carry explicitly?
Go through the cherries once and store their angle offsets.
Store their angles. Sort the angles, cherries by angles by cherries by angle.
The angle, if there is no absolute angle, it keeps changing in here by
minus. No. The absolute angle stays the same because the center of the cake stays the same. It's the other end of the line that changes. Okay? So all the cherries remain the same angle around the center. Okay? Once you make your other cake cut through one of these points, that defines a range of angles under which the cherries are above, and the other range of angles is the cherries that are below.
The absolute angle of the cherry is based on the x-axis?
No, based on your center point. Okay, and it's the coordinates of the cherry. It's basically the slope of the line defined by the cherry coordinate and the center coordinate. That's what tells you the angle. Right? Any questions? Okay? But so if I think about this now, what do we know now?
We haven't dealt with this big and hard one. Let's not deal with it then. Dog over should be doable. This is finding tangent points. This is basically finding what cherries are above and below a particular line. Okay? So I think these three are all doable by a sufficiently ambitious student. Okay? Any questions? Okay, and sufficiently long. Okay, I'm questioning ambition. Okay? Any questions? Okay, so beat on it. Hopefully we will get some of these for next time. Okay, thank you.